Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Full cast, Ben is back. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Armand. It's great to be back.
Good from your travels in France. And Julian is with us and in our studio with us as well, Eliana Bonaguto, who is an assistant who is going to be teaching us about cultural differences in dealing with people, because cultural differences seem to be at the fore. Hey, Baltimore, get your stuff together. What's going on down there, Ben?
It's a pretty intense situation. Once again, we've seen an abuse of power by, you know, police, and people are understandably very angry, and that's what we're seeing.
Because it boils down to the same basic stuff. If you look different, you smell different, you're going to get treated different.
That's what it seems like. I mean, I've been in trouble before myself. I've been arrested, and I'm sure that if I had been arrested in Baltimore, if I was African-American, who knows? You know, my situation might have been much more serious. My life could have been in danger, apparently. And that's not really acceptable in the United States in 2015.
If you're black or white, tall or short, male or female, gay or homosexual or straight, if you have money or no money, if you have an accent or don't have an accent, you're going to get treated differently each way. If you have a handicap or don't have a handicap, if you walk or don't walk, all of that is going to get some effect being directed to you. You know, and it's not like it's just simple we treat everybody different, because everybody's not the same. And I'm sure in nature you weren't meant to be the same. I'm sure in nature if you had a weak leg, you were assumed to be eaten by the other animals. You know, if you were darker skin, you were supposed to have something wasn't as good as if you were lighter skin. So nature kind of culls for it. But we humans perpetuate this. And when we do things like this crime in Baltimore, and we act out in such a ridiculous way against our fellow humans, it just hurts the heart. And here we are. And so I'm angry. You know, I want to. So what's the best thing we could do? We could pull out the National Guard. We could protect the place. Let's look at these differences and look at these cultural differences and see how they affect people. Now, if you're here in America and you don't have one culture, if you don't come from America itself, if you're not born in the States, that's the best example of it. And for that, Eliana, would you tell to us about being a hybrid?
Okay, yes. I was born in Italy, and for the first 20 years of my life, I lived there. And I came here over 10 years ago, and I found often that I was a hybrid between an Italian and an American. I'm neither one nor that. So when I'm here, I feel nostalgia towards my country, but when I'm there, I feel nostalgia towards this country.
Now, you are a therapist.
Yes, I am.
And you treat people from different cultures.
I do.
You have special cultures that you speak Spanish, you speak English, mm-hmm. Italian, what else?
I speak French, but I haven't dealt with French-speaking uh-huh. Clients. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, if you have, when you're dealing with people, you notice a big difference in their cultural orientation and how they respond to the intimacy of a therapeutic moment.
Okay, one thing that you need to keep in mind is personal space. What's personal space for Americans is different from, for example, somebody who come from Latin America. Americans value their personal space, so they keep a bigger distance from the therapist than their Hispanic counterpart.
So that means if you're sitting in a room, it's very likely that a Hispanic or an Italian would sit closer to you.
Yes.
Than if you were an American or some other country who would sit more at a distance.
Yes.
From you.
Yes, from me. They want to keep, for Americans, their personal space is very valuable and it needs to be a proper distance, or even from the therapist.
From the therapist being you or all therapists, you think?
All therapists.
It's funny, nobody ever gets away from me. Everybody's always within 3 feet of me.
Yes, but if you get too close to them, they will feel an invasion of their privacy, even with their friends. You can see the interaction between American friends and between Italian friends. It's kind of different.
It's like the people you know who hug with their pelvis back out, you know, when they go in for a hug and they keep air in between you, you know. I feel like I have a lot of friends that do that are American.
For example, male Italians, it's okay if they kiss each other on the cheeks between males, but American males don't usually do that. They don't kiss another male on the cheek. They want to keep their space even from
right.
That.
And in Asia, I know a lot of male students will hold hands in school too, to just as friends. It's mm-hmm. totally platonic.
In Italy too, girls can hold hands with each other and nobody will think that they are a couple, they're just friends.
Right.
Here, if I hold hands with somebody, with another girl, they will think that we are a couple.
So there are problems that mount up, that come up, specifically to being of a different culture.
Mm-hmm.
Not just Italian now.
Yeah.
And you treat some of these different cultures. I mean, there are some that are bizarre, my friends. There are psychological problems that you would not imagine exist, that get fixed in the brain, that are that we don't even think of in America. Could you give me an example of the one we were talking about a moment ago?
Yes, Asian men can have there's a culture bound syndrome in which an Asian man is afraid that his penis will shrink into his belly. So that's a culture bound syndrome.
And he's afraid of it. So does he walk around afraid, or does he come and talk about it? Does he talk about it to anybody?
They are afraid. They usually keep it's a more shy country. They usually keep it to themselves.
They don't tell anybody.
I might tell somebody they're close to.
And they may have a neurological reaction or some kind of an emotional reaction.
Yeah, they have an emotional reaction. They have anxiety over it, obviously.
So you could meet somebody in certain countries, and they could be very nervous. And if you really say, "What's really the matter?" the guy says, "My thing is shrinking."
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then if you pursue it further, he says, "It's shrinking into my belly."
Yeah.
And if you're a professional listening to this, you say, "Oh, yeah, that's called..."
Yes, you tell them, you explain to them how it operates and how it's not really happening. It's a culture-bound syndrome. It's a syndrome that they have. You don't even need to use the term culture-bound if you're there. And you explain to them how it works.
How it works, meaning that this is just something you and a lot of your buddies go through?
It's not a lot of our buddies, but some people go through, like anxiety. It's an anxiety disorder, basically.
Now, the interesting thing is that you imagine it as an anxiety disorder. Certain people get nervous about it. Certain people get nervous about it, and other people get different reactions.
Mm-hmm.
What are they?
Some people get nervous about
it. You said in different cultures, in different countries, they have different reactions.
For what? For the same syndrome?
For the same syndrome, yeah.
Well, it wouldn't be if that's a common syndrome in an Asian country, so you're likely to take it more seriously. Americans, they hear about it, it sounds kind of funny, right? And they would probably laugh about it because...
But you say in certain places you get depressed, in other places you get more anxious.
Yes. So depression is... The way depression manifests itself, it also can be culture-bound. Like in some countries, depression will manifest itself as tiredness. And meanwhile, in America, we have different in sleeping pattern. We're more tired, but we also have more hopelessness. We're more aware of it.
So, Eliana, what are the symptoms that you see the most coming to you that seem to be culture-bound, that you get treated in where you deliver your treatments? You treat men, women, families.
Mm-hmm.
What do you run into the most?
Okay, well, if somebody's a new immigrant, I wouldn't call it a culture-bound syndrome. We'll have an adjustment disorder, because if you come from a country like Argentina, for example, you come to America, things are done differently, and you're likely to be affected, and you're likely to feel more depressed, and your emotions are going to be more dysphoric. Culture bound syndromes that I've seen here are also like ataque de nervios. It's prevalent among Latin American women. It's not per se a panic attack. Women get upset and they faint. That's what is called an ataque de nervios.
And other places, they don't faint, they just get upset.
They just get upset, yes.
Our telephone number is 212-757-5555. Are there things about the culture that you think affect you in a way, or you're being lost in the culture, affect you in a certain way? Or do you think that there are things at play everywhere you go, including in your own personal prejudice towards other people? 212-757-5555.
I'm really interested by the term that Ileana's been using, culture-bound. It's something I've never heard before, but it makes perfect sense to me. And I'm wondering, Armand, what do you think are, like, American culture-bound problems? Like, for example, we mentioned how maybe there's a less intimacy between, less physical intimacy between friends, but what would you say would be some American culture-bound?
Well, you know, tomorrow we're going to be addressing some of the Italian culture-bound. Brown, because tomorrow I want to look at the idea of what it's like to be born in America with an Italian background. And we're going to have a specialist on who's going to be reading to us, and a therapist, as well as an article by someone who talks about what that was like in our background. Julian and I both grew up that way. And you have your own.
Sure.
What was yours? I mean, your cultural background is what?
French and Russian.
French and Russian, right? No. Yeah.
But I, you know, having grown up in New York, I have plenty of Italian-American friends, and I've definitely been privy to that experience as well.
Is there anything about the Russian part of you that plays right in the streets?
What do you mean by that?
I mean, that comes up when you're having to deal with your own life, the Russian part as opposed to the rest of you, the French part?
Maybe that's my angrier side.
Is it?
Yeah, because I think I that's my father's side, and I identify a lot of that emotion with him.
And what do you think is the aspect of that emotion, Ben? Do you think it might be indignance? Is that one of the words that would fit?
Sure, indignance.
That's what I would associate with Russian.
I have a very close friend that's Russian that I grew up with, and he's got a very impulsive kind of fast-moving confidence that has rubbed off on me, that I kind of hold deep. When I spend time with him, it comes more and more as a part of me.
Is that a kind of a self-confidence that may be real or not real?
I don't know if it's real. It's more of like, I think it actually is a cultural confidence. He talks about it as just like, I'm Russian, you know, like,
okay.
I'm Russian. I do this thing. I'm a man. I'm strong. I can do anything, you know, like kind of like, I'm going to, you know, chug this vodka or something like that. Like he'll ride this motorcycle. I'm going to do something daring, something exciting. And he does this because he's a Russian man, you know, like he does this as a Russian.
I'm not sure, Ben, that was the aspect of it you were talking about, is it?
I am a bit impulsive, like Julian mentioned. I have made some sort of rash decisions, if you will. But I think I tend to be prone to having a bit of a short temper in certain situations. And I can't say definitively where that comes from, but that is part of my experience.
Well, let me ask you, Ileana, again.
Yes.
Indignance as a word.
Mm-hmm.
Do you sense that in certain cultures?
Indignant in certain words, in certain
by
countries.
By indignance, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just like they feel like there's no respect. It's like
No respect towards them.
Yeah.
You know what I noticed? I noticed that everybody feels superior to the other country. I mean, people who come to this country that I encounter, a lot of them tend to bash America and say, we do this in our country differently than in their country. I don't think they feel they're being disrespected. Disrespected, I think, talking about Russians, yes, I do have a Russian friend who said that Hollywood ruined the Russian reputation. So Russians are often portrayed in Hollywood as evil people. And he said that's not true. It's Hollywood. But it's that stereotype has pervaded the collective imaginary. And
in your therapy with people, mm-hmm. not among your friends, do you find that the Russian families have a greater difficulty revealing themselves? Or you haven't had that kind of treatment. You may not have had that experience.
I haven't had that experience. I think the Russians...
Mostly you work with Latin families?
I've worked mostly with Latin families, yes.
What about... Let me ask this question about Latin families. And Chris, thank you for waiting. We'll get to you in just a moment. What about secrets in families?
Mm-hmm.
Secrets, these deep secrets that occur very often in Latin families.
Yes.
Nobody knows about that this took place. You find that frequently hiding in a family session and it has to be revealed?
I think that every family, whether Latin or from the United States or from Italy, everybody has secrets that they are embarrassed about.
And what happens with these secrets? Should they stay quiet or should they be revealed?
I think some should stay quiet.
Which ones should stay quiet?
Something that has no impact in the present.
Can't imagine.
They should just stay quiet.
Like what?
For example, somebody was, a couple came and he told me about his past, and he said he got in trouble because he told everything to his partner, he's gay, and they have a child together, and he told everything to his partner about his past, and that wasn't necessary, and his partner was blown away, and they had trouble, and then that's why they're coming to therapy. That wasn't necessary. We don't have to share every secret.
212-757-5555. Chris, this is Armand DeMille on the air. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good,
First
Chris.
First time caller.
Good.
Long time listener.
Thank you, Chris.
It's interesting listening to you speak about this. I'm African American and find myself at times feeling a bit defensive a lot because of people's perceptions of African American males. So, and when I say defensive, what ends up happening is I fight very hard to, in a sense, not play out the stereotypes. And of course, but at times, even though I go out of my way to not project these stereotypes, I still feel as though I get snubbed because I'm African American.
Sure, and that works both ways. So now, because you're trying not to play it out, you get snubbed, and if you played it out, you get snubbed.
Right. So it's almost like a double-edged sword.
Right.
Then at the same time, because of certain stereotypes, I'll use that as a defensive mechanism to keep people away.
Good. Like what, for example?
Not smiling, not joking. I'm very, my sense of humor is very, a nice sense of humor. And I often find myself that if I get too comfortable in certain arenas, especially with work, people will, I'll think they'll see me as, you know, the clown.
Mm-hmm.
And so I keep my distance.
Isn't being the clown the way you got through your family?
Oh, yeah.
Right, that's obvious. Right, I mean, that's what you learned as a kid, not to, just because of the culture. You learned how to get through your own family by being the clown. If you keep them laughing, this way they can't hit you with the spoon. You know what I mean? They can't find you to beat you.
Right.
Keep them laughing.
At the same time, or at the workplace, I often, or just in general, when one perceives someone as a clown, then you don't take them serious.
But you see,
and in
Chris,
my line of work, I tend to be kind of sarcastic, and I throw humor into my work.
Brilliant. It's brilliant. It's a great adaptation.
Yeah.
So it's a way of keeping people off balance.
Right.
So your humor is,
throwing
you say,
them off.
Is a defensiveness, but in the same way, it works to keeping them off balance until you feel solid on your feet. And when you feel solid on your feet, then you smile and you're not just throwing jokes.
Right.
So that's really when it comes down to you and your sense of your own security.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like you've grown a great deal over a short period of time.
Yes.
So
I think I found the balance.
I hear
it. But when you have things going on like what's happening in Baltimore, there's also a need to speak out. And at times, even with your own people, the way you express yourself or how you want to express yourself, or for that matter, what you say to express yourself, might not be what they want to hear on both sides.
I'm sure right now, Chris, that's the way people feel. But if you would speak out your heart right this minute about Baltimore, what would you say directly?
I would say communicate, mobilize, and organize. I don't have a solution. But I think if you went about it in that way, where you have open communication, mobilize people, and then organize those people, I think you would get results. Not, and that's my simple way of addressing it.
And if you were a part of it, how would you be a part of that?
I'm very creative, so I would lend my myself in a creative manner.
So let's not forget organize and mobilize, but let's not forget creatively, because Chris says, as well as that, don't do the same stupid mistakes. Find an alternative.
Or look at your past, and you see what works and what doesn't work. And obviously, rioting doesn't work, but at the same time, in America, we've been kind of spoiled, where the reason it's happening is because everybody holds it in.
That's right.
Everybody holds it in, and more or less, I think Martin Luther King was the one that said the riot is what the voiceless people say or react, how they react. And these people feel voiceless. I mean, they're also reckless. But it's a touchy situation, and then it doesn't help when you have the media just focusing on the negative.
Chris, I want to thank you for calling in and voicing yourself.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 212-757-5555. Some of the smartest audience. You know, this is our week here to be with you today and tomorrow. And then following that, we'll be doing the fun drive with a two-hour special on Tuesday. Ben, you want to say?
Yeah, I really related to what Chris said.
Pretty beautiful, right?
About humor and how he used humor as a strategy, both in his family and at work. And I guess for me, I'm still trying to find the balance that Chris mentioned as far as when it's, sometimes I feel like maybe I joke at the wrong times, but there's nothing that I get more of a kick out of than bringing laughter out of others. It makes me feel good. It's like, I don't know if it's an adrenaline thing or it's an approval seeking thing, but I just love to joke and make people laugh. And I've definitely had to find a way to balance that, especially in work situations.
What about your sense of humor, Ileana?
I think humor can be useful. I think humor can be useful to diffuse like a difficult situation. I find myself when I don't want to give a straight answer, that I find myself using humor to diffuse a situation. Like they'll ask me a question, I don't really want to answer, so I'll crack a joke. I think it's pretty like part.
Do you do
of
that
humans.
As a therapist?
No, not as a therapist.
Okay, then mostly I'm asking you as a therapist.
As a therapist, humor can actually help me lighten a situation. When somebody is like, sometimes you get stuck, sometimes there's also a moment of silence, but when a moment of silence is fine. Or sometimes there's tension, it helps relieve tension, and it also helps build a therapeutic alliance between patient and therapist.
Take another call. We have Michael. Michael, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello, Armand. How are you?
Good.
Hi. You were talking about what kinds of ethnic people and different people's origins, and mine's from Italian-American.
Hey, big show tomorrow.
Big show tomorrow?
On Italian-American, specifically.
On you?
No, on all of us.
Oh, and on BAI?
Yeah, and I need you. No, no, tomorrow's program is going to be focused on being an Italian-American in America today.
Oh, well, I can relate to being Italian-American for the past 68 years. And when I was younger, being an Italian-American was... It was kind of weird, you know. In certain places, depending on where you went, you were looked at as inferior.
Where were you brought up?
New York City.
Whereabouts?
The Bronx. I was born in. I lived in Manhattan for a while, and now I live in Westchester County.
More talk about that tomorrow. So. But as for now, as you hear today's program in cultural diversity,
right?
You say, well, the difference is according to where you are. My Italianism. Italianism, I like that. My Italianism could be negative or positive.
Yeah, well, so can mine. Depending on where you are. When I was a kid, it was more negative. And then when I went into the military in 1966, it was very negative.
Mm-hmm.
It was the only people that got treated more negative than me than the Italians in the military back then were the African Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't compare to African Americans by no means, but there has been, you know, I've had experiences with that.
Well, you make a very important point, Michael. You make a point that when you're at the low end of the pipe, when you're at the low end, they come kind of bunch together. So mm-hmm. Now Puerto Rican and Black and Italian and Polish. In certain places in the world, that just becomes the bottom end.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And so sometimes it all feels the same.
Right.
Is that the way it feels to you?
Not so much now as it did then.
Yeah.
You know, I feel that I feel that the Italian Americans have been more accepted in certain areas into the what I will call the white business world. And I feel that, you know, they got more acceptance now. They're accepted in politics and a lot of different areas.
How do you feel about this Baltimore thing, Michael?
I feel that these people in Baltimore have all the rights in the world to be doing what they're doing. They were left to rot. They were politically abandoned. They were economically abandoned. They were socially abandoned. And from my readings, a lot of it was just done pretty much deliberately.
And therefore, the killing of a Black person in Baltimore is justified or not justified?
The killing of a Black person by a cop?
Yes.
It's depending on the circumstances, but it's never justified as far as I'm concerned.
So as you think about what took place in Baltimore and what it led to, what do you feel?
Distress.
Yeah, I'm beginning to hear that.
A lot of distress. And the way the world is going today, it's, you know...
So you're saying to me, Michael, you're saying, Armand, I'm scared.
Yeah, I am. I am scared.
Good, let me hear.
I'm scared for my children. I'm scared for... I'm scared for everybody's children.
Yeah.
Not only my children.
Yeah.
And it's heartbreaking. And it seems to have gotten worse over the past 8 years.
And, Michael, as you listen to this stuff, you feel more and more powerless.
Yeah, I do. Well, I do. That's, you know, and the only time I feel any kind of, I get on the phone with politicians all the time, at least twice, three times a week, and give them what I think they're doing wrong and give them what I think they should be doing right or give them my opinions or whatever it is. But I feel that I have to speak.
At least you're a voice. Thank you very much for calling in, Michael.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure.
I'll call in tomorrow.
Sure, good.
All right, bye.
We'll be right back, my friends. This is Armand DeMille. Back in just a little while. is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind. Ben, what were we listening to?
That was Miles Davis with a cutoff of Kind of Blue, one of the great albums of all time. Not just a great jazz album, but
I remember this album the day it was made.
Yeah, it's a classic.
I coveted it. I remember bringing it up to my friend Harvey's apartment and putting it on his turntable and listening to it endlessly.
That was All Blues, I believe. Is that track two off the album? Yeah.
And Freddie the Freeloader and all the other ones on that.
Just five cuts on that album, but amazing. It doesn't need anything else. It's very kind of blues.
Play it in your waiting room. Why don't we play it in our waiting room all the time?
We do.
We do. Oh,
well,
right.
Not all the time, but
quite often, frequently. Hey, 212-757-5555. We're talking about cultural differences and the beginning of a discussion about cultural differences today and tomorrow, and we have Karen on the phone. Karen, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Oh, hi. I'm so glad.
I really appreciated what Chris had to say, as difficult as it was for me to listen to him and to hear his grappling with what's really unnecessary stress, because he's African American.
Yeah.
But I think he's a genius for figuring out the humor and for finding a way to cope with it. I also like the second caller, the Italian American man. I didn't get
Michael.
His name. Michael. And it got me to thinking about culturally bound syndromes, which your guest was speaking about. They've done this study. There have been recent psychological studies done where they show people a bunch of photos with both whites and black men in the photo holding either a wrench or a gun. And there are people, both white and black, who over-identify the instrument the person is holding as a gun when it's being held by an African-American person in the photo. You know, this seems to me like a culturally bound syndrome because people's perceptions are distorted by their prejudices and the prejudices of the society around us, and it influences each and every one of us, both African American, European American, Asian American,
and how would
whatever
you see,
one's origin.
Karen, how would you see it affecting you?
How does it affect me?
Yeah,
as I can almost every day.
So what are the cultural prejudices that you find yourself confronting, your personal ones?
Personally, I've been confronting sexism. I have confronted racism on different occasions, as it's affected me and others.
So let me take that back for you a moment, if you don't mind.
Sure.
You're saying you look for, you are affected for, and you feel a struggle with any form of sexism if it comes in your direction?
Or if it's directed towards others.
Or if it's directed towards others. But if it's directed towards you?
I don't like it.
You don't like it. And when you see it in some form of male identification, power over a female kind of sexism, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, or outright hostility towards me.
Hostility towards
you.
And when it comes at you, give me a form that it might come at you in.
In the workplace.
Okay, what happens? What happens?
In the workplace, being addressed in a disrespectful way.
Like what?
As in sweetie or, honey, when that's not appropriate.
Okay, so when that's somebody...
That's very mild. That's,
when
I have
somebody calls you sweetie or honey...
Sweetie
or honey, and it's in your workplace, but they say it in a way that's supposed to meant a little bit degrading to you, you know?
Right.
That's the way it is. They don't say it out of tenderness or because the guy's over 70 years old and he forgets names.
No.
It's the most common thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Older people, they forget names, so they call everybody sweetie.
Of course.
And it's not sexism.
Yeah,
it's ageism.
The other thing that I was thinking of, what a shame that African Americans and ethnic white Asian, Hispanic, working class people cannot realize. It's mostly the responsibility of those who are not African Americans because they're not being shot. What a shame that they can't realize that they're really fighting against the same, sort of the same demons. They're being squeezed and stressed financially and otherwise, and pushed to the breaking points.
Yeah.
What a shame.
What do you suggest?
Education.
Yeah, trouble.
Which was the fourth. I think Chris mentioned communication, organization, and mobilization. Education is the, is the fourth piece, I think.
Yeah, but not everybody could afford it.
No, education as in WBAI, why not?
I mean,
not education necessarily degrees, but education in that learn that you're no better or no worse, potentially, than anybody else.
And I'll go back to my statement, not everybody could afford it. You see, sometimes it's the ignorance that protects you.
Of course, yeah.
And you can't afford the intelligence. You can't afford to see the truth. And you live just on that lack of intelligence. That's why some people can't afford the education. It's a pity. So it takes the rest of us trying to show them in a gentle way the world is.
Right.
Without necessarily pressing up against their noses. You know? Well, you're good at pressing up against their noses, but I'm
sometimes
sure.
Sometimes you really want to.
Sometimes
you really
person.
Just have to, too.
Karen, thank you very much for calling.
Thank you very much. Bye.
212-757-5555. Yes, that's true.
You know, both Karen and Michael touched on something that I think is really important, which is the underlying economic nature behind a lot of the problems we see right now. And we've seen since the 70s a political and business elite that have shipped jobs overseas by the tens of millions. And it's had a disastrous impact on cities like Baltimore and many other cities just like it, St. Louis, Detroit, Hartford, Connecticut, a little bit closer to home. A lot of these cities have lost jobs, just hemorrhaged jobs. And I think, like Karen pointed out, many people are in the same boat and don't even realize it, that it's an economic difficulty that we're collectively facing. And those are questions we need to be asking.
Yeah, well, the separateness. Our previous guest said, there's a big difference if a person looks like they're financially fit and if they don't look like they're financially fit. You actually approach them different, speak to them differently, hear them differently.
Right, and even in a job interview, I think a person who seems more financially stable is going to be given more consideration for the position.
That's right.
When in reality, the person who needs it the most may be passed over just off of an appearance.
It always pays to wear a suit.
Sure.
When we were kids going for jobs, you had to go buy a $99 suit just to apply for any job at all. 212-757-555. This is Alan. Hi, Alan. You're on the phone.
Hi, Armand. I'm glad I got through. I'll try to talk as fast as possible. About 25 years ago, I happen to be Jewish, and about 25 years ago, I was sitting in my friend Kathy's house, who happened to be Italian, and it was around Christmas time, and her mother was in the kitchen cooking, making up a feast. And all of a sudden, me and my friend Bill were sitting on the couch with Catherine, and we heard the mother say, "Those so-and-so Jews, what they did to Jesus." And me and Billy looked at one another and talk about culture and different upbringings and everything like this. I grew up in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, and when I was 13, my mother got me a mezuzah to wear around my neck, and the super saw it, and he called me a miserable little kike. So, and even watching on Channel 4, they have this series, AD, the Bible. And I think you know what I'm driving at.
Sure, it's painful on your side to be like.
And it's something. People. We got one world, and like this fellow that was talking to you. He was born in the Bronx and lived in New York and lives in Westchester now. I could relate to how he feels about the world. I mean, and Stephen Hawking just came out with a report that he doesn't think the world that will sustain human beings for another 1,000 years. Well, I'm not worried about the next 1,000 years. I'm worried about the next 1,000 minutes. But you
so,
know,
Alan,
you know
Alan, how in your life? Let me ask you something.
Yes, go.
So you seem to be a very intelligent man who have been enculturated. You've mixed with a lot of cultures. How have you done family-wise?
Family-wise?
Yeah, how have you done? It sounds like you've had trouble with your family.
I don't know. You're a magic man. I'll tell you something, the way you pinpoint things.
Yeah.
My whole life. I've spoken to you before. I have Parkinson's. I'm married to a girl from Trinidad. And,
How's it going, Alan?
It's not going too good.
Yeah.
And I left my name. I called before, and I got through to your office, and I left my name there because I spoke to you in the past about my Parkinson's and living on Social Security. And but anyway, that's
but it's been
story.
Rough. It's been rough with that. Plus,
very rough. Very rough. My life has been rough. But
how old are you now, Alan?
I'm 63.
Jesus.
And why can't it just boil down to something? Why can't we just all get along? What's causing? I think all this social instability is coming from the powers that are higher up. I hate to point fingers, but...
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Can you boil this down to the following phrase?
Yes.
All right, Alan, why can't you just love me? Why can't you just love me? Just try the phrase on. Go ahead.
Why can't you just love me?
That's it. That's it. Stay with me. I have the same question. Why can't you just love Alan? No matter what he does, no matter how he jerks around, no matter how he spits at you, no matter what he does, that's all he really wants. And it's hard. It's hard because he's got to fight.
But you know what, Armand? I don't like the way things are going.
I know.
I don't like the way things are going.
I hear you.
It's a whole different subject for that. Why Obama is picking with Russia
and Alan.
And it's just, you know what I'm talking about.
I know that I just brought you down to the heart of you, and a part of you had to push on the outside again, which I fully respect and understand. Yeah.
But,
what are we going to do?
It's tough being a scapegoat sometimes, you know?
I'm on your side, Alan.
Okay, I'm on. Listen,
nice to speak
I could talk
you.
To you for hours, but I know other people want to get through. But I left my number with the office because I need somebody to talk to that could help me with my Parkinson's and my life. And
I'll get to it, okay?
Okay. Listen, I think the world appreciates you. Everybody that listens to you on the radio, it's a humongous family, so to speak.
Thanks for being part of it.
Thank you, Armand.
212-757-5555. Yes, when the story gets too close, you know, and it hurts, you got to go to the outside and find the fault on the outside rather than feel that hurt. Or you got to make a joke. One or the other. They all work. Everything works.
And it's scary to really confront that hurt because there's a depth. There's a depth to it.
That's right. It's only an abyss.
It's only an abyss. I remember when Alan called us last fall.
What did Alan have to do with last fall?
Well, because he just called us today. And
Alan. That's Alan from last fall.
He called us, I think, in October or November.
Julian. We have such a team. The boys are back, and hey, this is Adam. Adam, you're on the phone. This is Armand.
Hi there.
Hi there.
How are you?
Good.
All right. I want to read a disturbing call that came into another program recently.
No obscenities. No obscenities in it.
No. Good. The discussion of stereotypy, profiling. Cultural differences. So here it is. Hey, name of host. You know, in all reality, white people are an endangered species. Unfortunately, we don't understand that, as a collective, we are in a position to make them extinct. If we would just come together and unite and do the necessary things that it takes to overturn this white supremacist country, end quote. Now, the host had nothing to say about this desire for ethnic cleansing.
Oh, is that what that was?
Do you not, excuse me?
Is that what that was? A desire for ethnic cleansing?
We can make them extinct.
Uh-huh.
I don't care which ethnicity we're talking about. That's the urge to cleanse the social.
So you think that this caller was saying
the social landscape of a seeming problem people.
Oh, that's incredible. So somebody called in and said, "Hey, we've got the power. We're white. We can kill everybody else."
Excuse me?
They're saying we're white. We can kill everybody else.
This was a. An Afro-American caller.
An African-American caller says, we're black, we can kill everybody else.
We can make them, white people, extinct.
All right. So that's silly, isn't it?
Pardon?
That's silly, isn't it?
Oh, I think it's more than silly, don't you?
I think it's silly.
And I think the fact that this kind of...
No, wait, you're asking me. Let me tell you, Adam.
...expression was allowed to pass without a word of demurrer on WBAI, the free speech... peace and
okay, Adam, back up just a second before we do.
Is an abomination?
Absolutely. Well, abomination is a big word for me.
No, sure it is.
I don't even spell it. But I could tell you
don't
this.
Don't play games.
No, I'm not playing games with you. I'm telling you the truth. I'm telling you the truth. That is something so silly that someone would say on the air that I would challenge it.
If it were sent
it to me, I would challenge it because it's something that is said from the mouth of a babe. From mouth of a child.
No,
that's not a human.
This is said from adults, from Julius Caesar to Adolf Hitler to anybody you want to name. This is the idea of extermination.
So
of
if
people.
I had you on the other side of the phone when that call came in, what would you have said back?
I would have said, stop it right
say
there.
It. That's right. Go ahead. Say it.
I'm not going to continue with what I would say. I just want...
Wait. Say what you would say, Adam. Adam, I want you to be a thinker. I want you to give us what you got.
This kind of thing happens on WBAI regularly.
I know, but meanwhile, tell me what you would say back to the man.
I would say, stop
that right there.
And what do you think you would accomplish?
And you take him on.
What
you wouldn't let that
do you
pass.
Think you are accomplishing by exterminating millions of people?
I got you. You'd get to the content of it. Well, Adam, I'm glad there's somebody around here who would hold it up. Maybe you should get a radio show, you know, to be able to talk directly to this kind of a comment.
Well, maybe I should.
I'm not in disagreement, you know.
You know, it got worse also, but I won't quote the additional material.
Uh-huh.
But if I may have 1 minute.
Sure.
You began talking about stereotyping. Particularly with respect to what is happening in Baltimore. But I would suggest that we always, as you do with callers, as you did with me, try getting a little closer to home. And so with Ben, for instance, who found in his aggressiveness, his Russian-ness, there's a tendency to try to name these things and to color them and to understand them in ways that don't get to just their human root.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, I hear. Thank you very much, Adam.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course, sometimes we try to simplify it as best we can. We got time for one more caller, don't we? We must have. So this is what we're looking at. We're looking at 212-757-5555. We've taken a number of your calls. I'm going to try to return your calls today, as I always do. So as you see, as we peek into cultural stereotypes and kind of prejudices coming at us, especially today, it really opens some old wounds, stuff to take a look at, and we try to simplify it if possible, but sometimes it's complicated, as it is today, and we are going to take one more caller. Here we go. Carol, hi, this is Armand DeMille, you're on the air.
Armand, how are you?
Hello, Carol.
Armand, doesn't it just, everything that we are talking about today, doesn't it just boil down to fairness, justice? It's like everything that's going on in the world, everybody, and I'm quoting the late, great Peter Tosh, who says, everyone is crying out for peace, none is crying out for justice.
Wait a minute.
It's about being treated fairly.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Did Peter Tosh say that or did he sing that?
He wrote it and he sang it.
What did it sound like when he sang it?
Everyone is crying out for peace.
And the rest.
None is crying out for justice. And he said, I need equal rights and justice. Yes, there will be no peace until everybody is treated fairly and justly.
Thank you so much, Carol.
Yes.
Bye-bye. This is Armand DeMille with a positive mind. We have to be going. My friends, thank you, Carol. Thank you, Peter Tosh. We will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. with more of this interesting stuff.
It's great to be back. I missed you guys.
Yeah, great to have Ben back, and great show today. See you tomorrow.
Right.